Chapter 41. Yasna, 9. The Vorin wedding ceremony was an archaic tradition, a remnant of epochs when the religion had held far more sway than it did in modern Roshar. Vorinism hadn't had any real power since the turn of the epoch, when the Oathshard kings had proclaimed the cycle of returns broken. The religion's eventual decision to stop warning about storm shades and returns, accepting as canonical the reports that the heralds themselves had declared the Hothan defeated, had only weakened its stance further. In modern Roshar, it was fashionable to profess Vorin allegiance, but few noblemen gave much thought to the Almighty's supposed whims beyond paying their tributes and attending the occasional reading from the arguments. The monasteries were no longer the political power they once had been. Still, tradition was the foremost law of Aleth noble culture, and even a professed heretic such as Yasna could not escape a Vorin wedding. Of course, as much as she was displeased by her forced submission to the Almighty's approval of her union, the emotion could not compete with her distaste of the man she was to marry. Meridas stood with the air of smug satisfaction of a man who thought himself responsible for far more than he could legitimately take credit. He wore a fashionable pair of long leather boots, a pair of loose trousers bulging out over the top, and a militarily cut overshirt with wide cuffs. His cloak was blue, of course, to signify his union with the Colin house, and it matched Yasna's tala, which Meridas himself had purchased and sent to her. It was a fabulously extravagant gown, dressed with frills and colored with the deepest of blue dyes. The left sleeve, traditionally long, was tiered with overlapping swaths of light blue silk down to the cuff, which ended just short of her ankles. The location for the ceremony was the 11th hall. The wedding was attended mostly by women, for their men were at war beside their king. Her brother himself was noticeably absent. Elokar's official reason was the pressing need to respond to Jezzan Rosh's attempted assassination. The truth, Yasna suspected, was more private. She had seen Elokar several times before he left the palace to join his troops, and each time he had been unable to meet her eyes. It did not surprise her that he had chosen not to attend the wedding. The ceremony began, and Yasna noted with distaste that Lardan, the obsequious first monk of Peacehome, had been chosen to officiate. Lardan stood at the front of the room beside Meridas, beaming at the importance of his position, and probably thinking of the generous tribute her brother would have given Peacehome in exchange for performing the ceremony. The first monk began with an overdone speech, then waved for 100 candle-bearing monks to enter the hall, lighting the way for Yasna to approach. She did so, trying to keep her head high and her face expressionless, despite her sickened stomach. Shinri had disappeared the night of the dueling competition. Undoubtedly, Elokar had assumed the girl knew too much and had ordered her silenced. The thought made Yasna despair. Shinri had done nothing wrong other than to associate with Yasna. Her death, like those of Nelshenden and Kemnar, could be attributed directly to Yasna's foolish devotion to her brother. Yasna had spent the last few weeks locked within her rooms, only allowed freedom when escorted by a 10-set soldiers sworn to Meridas. Every letter she scribed was confiscated by the guards, presumably to be translated by monks and likely destroyed. Those responses which did come had been opened and perused and were always of little use. She had hoped that some of her more subtle pleas for aid might go unnoticed by her captors, but she suspected that Meridas himself was the one looking through her letters. For an unmarried man such as himself to excel so wonderfully at politics, he had likely been forced to learn some traditionally feminine skills. When she reached the front of the room, Yasna knelt on the cushion, bowing her head before the standing form of the man who would soon be her husband. She knelt with resignation, not without hope. Though her skin squirmed at the thought of Meridas touching her, she had never expected anything but a marriage of necessity. For now, there was little she could do against the men who had betrayed her. However, the wife of a Parshan was a powerful woman, and men were creatures of short memory, quick to laxness, and presumed victory. She had seen that her brother kept his throne during the chaotic years following their father's death. She could see it lost to him during the uncertain years of conquest. The ceremony proceeded, Yasna kneeling in the uncomfortable position as Lardan droned on, quoting from the arguments and the Way of Kings. He drew upon the formal Vorin ceremonial texts as well, quoting passages that implied nobility was granted and suffered by the monks, passages that would never have been tolerated outside a wedding speech. Soon the time came for the final piece of the ceremony. Lardan proffered his blessing, and Meridas extended his hand to accept Yasna as his own. Yasna looked up at Meridas, regarding the oily merchant in his finery, his hand proffered. When she took that hand, she would legally be his, bound by promise to protect his interests and his power. The room was silent as she stared at the open palm. Lardan coughed uncomfortably, and women in the crowd shot each other nervous glances. "Can I do it?" Yasna wondered. "Political necessity or not, can I marry the man who killed Nell Shendon?" The door burst open, a sudden breeze causing candles to flicker. Heads turned to regard a bloodied soldier. "My lord!" the man cried, stumbling forward, monks and noblewomen shuffling away like scattering rodents. "The palace is under assault!"
"What foolishness is this?"
Meridas demanded, lowering his hand. The soldier held his side, blood dripping between fingers.
"The oath gates, my lord, they have been breached."
Meridas paused, then white smoke formed around his hand.
"Take my wife to my chambers," he commanded four men of his honor guard as his blade appeared in his hand. "The rest of you, come with me."
The soldiers pulled her to her feet, several ladies-in-waiting scrambling forward to help Yasna gather up her extensive blue sea-silk train. The soldiers nervously led her from the room, the monks and other nobility staying behind, muttering amongst themselves in uncertain voices. The oath gates? Breached? It was unlikely. The gates had been designed so that no such thing could happen. No king, even one of the infamously noble kings of the original Oath Pact, would allow an uncontrollable portal into the center of his capital city. Both sides of a gate had to be opened by awakeners before passage was possible. Unlikely, true, but not impossible. An awakener spy could have been sent, a young one, new to his power. One who had not lost his sensitivity to the outside world, but instead retained his ambition and interest in politics. If such an awakener could have found his way to the Oathgate chamber, opening their side. But who would invade? Dalinar? Had he joined with Jezenrosh? Somehow, Yasna couldn't see her stately uncle working in such a devious manner. Thelena, then? King Amelin was said to be very lax with his awakeners, allowing them free rein of the city. Rhal Arum was even more depleted of troops and shard-bearers than it had been during the extended Prala campaign. Elokar wanted to make quick work of Jezenrosh, attacking with flair, before his allies remembered how wearied they were of war. What if the first capital had proven too tempting a gem for an outside invader? Such were her thoughts as the guards rushed her toward the Aleth section of the palace. She was so wrapped up in her machinations that she didn't notice the attack until the first guard fell dead. Yasna stumbled back in shock as the man died, her ladies screaming in horror. Meridas's soldiers leapt into action, defending themselves against a group of armed attackers who burst from a doorway at the side. The attackers had superior numbers, however, and they quickly overwhelmed the three men. In a matter of seconds, all three of Meridas's soldiers had fallen. Yasna looked for escape, but knew that her dress would keep her from moving with any speed. She would easily... Yasna froze, realizing with shock that she recognized one of the attackers. "Kemnar?" she asked incredulously. Kemnar bowed slightly, motioning for his men to secure the hallway.
"My lady," he said.
Yasna exhaled in relief, holding up her dress and stepping over a guard's body. Her lady attendants cowered behind her, confused. She had thought Kemnar dead for certain. She should have known better. "It took you long enough," she said. Kemnar smiled toothily. He bore a fresh scar on his face, one that came dangerously close to his right eye.
"Sorry about that," he said. "Elokar knew I escaped. Had half the soldiers in the city looking for me. Fortunately, I know a number of people who've made quite a profession out of not being found."
"Kemnar!"
one of the men shouted. She recognized several of them from her personal guard. The others were new to her.
"There is fighting coming from this direction."
"Gather up the fallen swords,"
Kemnar ordered, stepping forward and picking up Yasna's train.
"We'll probably be tight for funds, and we should be able to pawn them. Watch that corridor. I don't want any surprises."
He looked at her.
"Sorry about this, my lady," he said,
taking his sword and beginning to slice off the back of her dress. "Then," Yasna said, "the palace is really under attack?"
"Yes,"
Kemnar replied in a low voice.
"We were planning to wait for this evening to rescue you, but when the ruckus started, we decided to move."
He pulled the bulk of the train free and tossed it aside. Then he waved to his men.
"Let's go," he said. "Our primary concern is Lady Colin. Let that fool Meridas worry about the invaders."
The 10 men nodded, escorting Yasna and the three frightened ladies-in-waiting away from the sounds of fighting toward the eastern section of the palace. As they walked, Yasna caught sight of a doorway into one of the servants' quarters. She froze, gasping slightly despite herself, as she saw the bodies littered within. Kemnar paused beside her, face grim. Then he nodded for them to continue.
"Kemnar," Yasna said.
"My lady, we have no choice," he said. "What would you have us do? Fight to defend the palace and risk losing you to the invaders? Do you have any idea how valuable a captive the king's own sister would make?"
Yasna nodded, steeling herself against the carnage. She had seen death before. She had spent years with Elokar on the battlefields of Prala. But common people were somehow different than soldiers. "At least the massacre tells us it's not Dalinar who is invading," she said, moving forward again. Kemnar nodded.
"They must be trying to secure the palace, taking control of the Oath Gates quickly before news can reach Elokar. Some remnants of the Pralan rebels, perhaps? This Ranta group that Lord Dalinar thinks is behind the death of the traitor? If they got an army to the traitor without us seeing, they might have been able to get one into the city."
"Perhaps," Yasna said.
Their trail ended at a large, unoccupied set of chambers in the eastern wing. It had a wide terrace with large open doors that overlooked the city below. Kemnar peered through the balcony doors, then cursed quietly.
What?
Yasna whispered, joining him and peeking out into the sunlight.
The ramp, Kemnar said, pointing.
A squad of at least 5 10-set soldiers lounged near the top of the stone ramp leading down into the city proper.
But they wear Aleth blue,
Yasna said eagerly. We can bring them back to the palace and—
Those are no soldiers of ours, my lady,
Kemnar informed her.
There are hardly that many left in the entire city, and they would never gather here. They're too busy guarding the walls. The invaders want to box us in.
Kemnar ducked back. He didn't speak, but Yasna could see the troubled look in his eyes. If the eastern ramp, the one farthest from the Oathgate chamber, was guarded...
We should check the western ramp, just in case,
Kemnar decided.
Other than the ramps, the only way out is through the Oath Gates themselves. And I doubt—
Kemnar!
The lookout shouted.
We've been spotted!
Kemnar cursed, grabbing his sword and waving his men to fan out. At the end of their hallway, a large squad of soldiers strode their direction. Kemnar was right. Despite their blue uniforms, they were collectively too tall and broad to be Aleths.
Vaedans, Yasna thought.
It would explain the slaughter. Vaedanar was far more militaristic than Alethkar, its soldiers known for their harshness. Kemnar slammed the hallway door shut, but there was no bar, only a small latch. He jumped back as the door smashed open, and the battle began. The fight went poorly from the very beginning. Yasna backed up to stay out of the way, but there was nowhere to run. They dared not escape through the terrace, for just beyond, mercifully out of earshot, waited the ramp-guarding soldiers. Kemnar's men were outnumbered nearly 2-1, and they had to worry about protecting Yasna and keeping any of the enemy from escaping through the terrace and bringing enemies up from behind. Yasna watched her defenders die. They fell with heroism, but they died all the same. Soon, only Kemnar and 2 other men remained, backed up in a tight circle around Yasna and the 3 ladies. Her protector's breathing was heavy, limbs wet with blood. 9 enemy remained, 7 spearmen and 2 sword-bearing noblemen. There was a lull as the 2 sides regarded one another, their companions dying on the floor around them. Kemnar glanced up suddenly, his eyes flickering toward something behind the invaders. One of the soldiers noticed the motion, turning. He mumbled something, alerting his companions. A man stood at the end of the hallway, alone, dark, almost like a shadow. He was unarmed. Taln, the madman. Yasna groaned quietly. She had forgotten that this was the day she had arranged for his departure through the Oath Gates. She had unwittingly brought him to his death. Taln stepped forward.
No, Taln! Yasna yelled. Run!
He did run, toward the soldiers. He stooped down, cloak fluttering as he dashed forward with a speed that belied his size. The nobleman at the back raised his sword to cut the madman down. Steel glittered in Taln's fingers as 2 daggers appeared from beneath his cloak. Surprisingly, he dodged the nobleman's attack, then rammed his daggers into the man's upper arms. The nobleman screamed in pain. Taln snatched the falling sword, then rammed its hilt into the nobleman's face, the force of the blow tossing the man backward. The nobleman fell against the back ranks of his own men, and the battle pulsed to life again, but with a change. The new participant drastically altered the flow of the conflict. Taln was a boulder rolled through a patch of insects. He was a spinning god of death, quick, precise, almost inhuman. He sliced the end off a spear as it thrust for him, then easily beheaded its bearer. As Kemnar stumbled near Yasna, Falling beneath the assault of several soldiers, Taln hurled his sword. The fine steel short sword whipped through the fray, slamming into the head of one of Kemnar's assailants, causing the man to stumble long enough for Kemnar to regain his footing. Taln kicked up the 2-foot end of the spear he had sheared from its haft, catching the pseudo-weapon without even glancing toward it, then plunged it dagger-like into the chest of an attacking spearman. Even as the attacker fell, Taln bent to the side, dodging another spear. He grabbed the offending spear, yanking it in its bearer's hands, so the haft came up and took its owner in the chin. A kick sent the man reeling back into the second nobleman, stunning both long enough for Taln to duck and rip the broken spearhead out of the dying soldier, only to plunge it into the chest of the off-balanced spearman. The soldier fell, dropping his spear as if into Taln's waiting hand, and this came up to block the nobleman's attack. The nobleman's sword bit deeply into the wood, and Taln spun the spear, sliding both weapons from their owner's hands and dropping them to the ground. The nobleman glanced toward his sword as Taln reached to the side where the second spearman was trying to pull the broken spearhead from his chest. Taln wrenched the spearhead free, letting the man collapse with a sigh, then slammed it into the nobleman's back as the man ducked to retrieve his sword. Kemnar and his 2 companions held their ground, finishing off the last 2 soldiers. As the final Vaden fell, Kemnar jerked to a surprised halt, regarding the swath of dead men at Taln's feet. The madman was completely unwounded. Kemnar whispered the 10th name of the Almighty, lowering his sword. The other guards did likewise. Then, from behind Taln, a group of people poured into the hallway. Kemnar fell into a fighting stance before realizing that these were not more soldiers. Far from it. Though most bore weapons of some sort, they held them uncertainly. There had to have been at least 50 of them, palace servants and other citizens, a group of children, and several litters carrying the wounded. Taln stepped forward as Kemnar checked his fallen comrades for life. The madman stood before Jasnah for a moment, quiet, but breathing deeply from the battle.
"Lady Colin," he finally said.
"Madman," she replied, tipping her head.
"It seems your family isn't the only one who dreams of holding all 10 oath gates for itself."
Jasnah flushed with anger despite herself. "Do not compare me with these," she said, nodding to the slaughterers. Taln eyed them, then nodded.
"You are right. I apologize."
"You fight well," she noted. "Unexpectedly well. Perhaps I shouldn't have kept you from taking back your sword at the feast." Taln smiled slightly.
"If you hadn't stopped me, I wouldn't be here now, and you would be dead at these soldiers' hands. The Almighty's ways."
Then he turned, eyes losing their smile as he regarded the dead. Kemnar had found 2 men alive and was helping one to his feet while his companions bound the other's wounds. He would have to be carried. Jasnah's stomach turned at the sight of the massive group of peasants. How were they to escape with such a great number? In fact, how would anyone escape? Taln had rescued them, but if the oath gates had fallen as Kemnar claimed, an army was likely on its way through at the moment. Though Taln fought amazingly well, he still fought as a man, with steel and wood. She had seen no signs of supposed divinity, and one man, no matter how good, would not be able to stand against such odds. Taln obviously saw the look in her eyes. He moved over, peeking carefully out at the ramp beyond.
"We can't escape," she whispered.
Taln shook his head.
"There's another way. Isel, Janiz, help Lady Yasna's men with their wounded. The rest of you, let's go.
We don't have much time.
Two of the palace servants hopped forward, moving to assist Kemnar. The rest of the citizens stood nervously, gripping their weapons. Kemnar glanced at Jasnah questioningly. She held up a hand, bidding him not to join the fleeing peasants. The madman spoke with presumed authority, obviously giving no thought to the fact that Jasnah, or even Kemnar, grossly outranked him. In another man, the assumptions would have been insultingly arrogant. To Tom, they simply seemed natural. He had led men before. Whoever he really was, that much was obvious. "Where do you seek to take us?" Jasnah demanded, as Tom picked through the fallen weapons, distributing them as he saw fit. The madman looked up.
"The palace cellars," he informed. "There's a passage there into the caverns beneath the mountain."
Jasnah raised an eyebrow skeptically. Tom sighed, then approached her, holding the fallen nobleman's sword.
"Look," he said quietly, "you think I'm insane, but I obviously learned how to fight somewhere. Is it inconceivable that I might know something about this building that you do not? Your family has, after all, lived here for less than a generation."
Jasnah narrowed her eyes, but said nothing. Tom obviously took the silence as assent. He handed her the sheathed sword.
"Here," he said, "hold this. I may need it later."
With that, he waved his ragtag group forward, taking the point position, followed closely by several younger men and his peace-home monk friend. Kemnar stepped over next to her, watching the strange group leave the room.
"The cellars will leave us trapped," he noted.
"We're trapped anyway," Jasnah decided. "Besides, it might earn us a little bit of time. You said the invaders are trying to secure the palace. They'll check the cellars last, since they have no exits."
No exits.
Her own words fell harshly on her ears. Kemnar seemed to accept them, however, and he waved his three able-bodied companions to close around Jasnah to escort her after Tom's troop. The going was brutally nerve-wracking, but mercifully uneventful. The palace felt oddly silent now, an atmosphere enhanced when they passed corpses in hallways or rooms. Some were palace guards, but more often they were regular citizens, cut down as they ran or hid, slaughtered, regardless of gender or age. The hallways, once familiar to her, now felt alien. Jasnah shivered. After a short time of travel, Tom held up a hand, stopping the procession. Jasnah pushed her way forward, past wounded servants and young men with untested weapons. Tom had given some of them swords, she noted, despite their citizen status.
"What?"
she asked, as he stood quietly.
"Listening," he said. "There is battle up ahead. I had assumed the palace secured, but someone obviously fights on."
Jasnah frowned. She heard nothing. The direction Tom had indicated led to the Oath Gates. Their group had been forced to skirt uncomfortably close to the center of the palace in order to reach the cellar stairwells. Tom waved her to remain where she was, then crept forward to a hallway intersection. He returned a few moments later.
"We'll have to sneak past the next intersection," he explained to Jasnah and the few men who stood near the front.
"Shouldn't we go and help whoever's fighting?" the monk asked.
Tom shook his head.
"We shouldn't have delayed this long as it is. It isn't your life and mine we risk now, Lan, but the lives of all those we've saved. We cannot afford further recklessness."
Tom organized the peasants into a line, then approached the intersection and waved them forward in small groups. Not waiting for her turn, Jasnah joined him at the intersection, the weight of the sword he had given her unfamiliar in her hands. She ignored his suffering glare, turning to peer past him down the leftmost hallway of the intersection. she was mildly surprised to realize that he was right. There were sounds coming from that direction. The hallway broadened near its end into a small entryway, and she could make out forms moving in this section, though she could see nothing distinct. Occasionally, a yell of pain would carry through the stone passages. There were, however, no sounds of metal on metal, just the screams. "More executions," she said grimly.
"No," Tarn corrected, as the servants continued to pass. "It's something else. Those screams are all Vaden."
"You claim to be able to tell accents from screams?" Yasna scoffed. Tal nodded distractedly, looking down the hallway with confused eyes. Then his eyes opened wide. He turned with a sudden motion.
"Lan! The cellar stairwells are two intersections up on the right. Lead the people down and wait for me there."
Lan opened his mouth to object, but Taln ignored him, taking off down the side hallway in a fast creep. Yasna cursed quietly, watching him go. What was so important that he would abandon the people so quickly after giving his speech on not being reckless? He's insane, she reminded herself. He may seem stable, but he's not. However, insane or not, they needed him. If the secret passage in the cellars did exist, Taln would have to live long enough to show it to them. "Kemnar, go with the people and protect them," she ordered. "I'm going to bring the idiot back."
"I'll send my men," Kemnar replied. "But I'm not leaving you."
"Fine," Yasna said, rising and moving down the hallway with as much stealth as she could in the frilled blue dress. She could see Taln up ahead, standing in a pillar alcove just before the hallway widened. She needn't have worried about sneaking. The soldiers ahead weren't watching their backs, instead focused on something Yasna couldn't see. She joined Taln in his alcove, receiving another suffering glare.
"What is it?" she hissed, ignoring him.
Taln nodded past the pillar as something walked into view ahead of them. A man. Meridas.
"My blade,"
Taln whispered. The nobleman stood indifferently before a group of nervous invaders, their spears held at the ready. The remains of those foolish enough to attack lay on the ground already, dismembered in various ways. Meridas held Taln's shard blade casually by his side, point down, in his odd, relaxed, dueling stance. Meridas dashed forward without warning. The seven spearmen didn't stand a chance. Not against a shard blade. Meridas took them down in three swings.
"He's good," Taln noted with a frown. "I didn't expect that."
"Meridas!" Yasna called, showing herself as the nobleman wiped his sword. Meridas raised an eyebrow as he saw her, then frowned as he saw Taln.
"You should escape the palace, woman," he said,
turning away from her and stepping over a body. He walked away impassively.
"Where are you going?"
"The Oath Gates," he said. "I'll cut my way through and escape to warn your foolish brother. I told him not to leave the city so undermanned." "The Oath Gates are sealed," Taln said. "King Elokar ordered them closed. How will you escape through them without an awakener?"
Meridas paused. Just then, a door at the side of the hallway flew open, revealing two men in shard plate, probably summoned to deal with Meridas. They assessed the situation and the dead soldiers, then one stepped forward and held out his blade in a dueling posture. Meridas smiled, as if their arrival were a pleasant gift, and nodded his head to the first man. Beside Yasna, Taln tensed.
"No," she hissed. "These are shard bearers. They'll cut you down without—"
Taln reached up, ignoring her as he grabbed the hilt of the sword she still carried. In front of them, Meridas and the first man began their duel.
"Shard bearers are like other men," Taln whispered, hand on hilt. swing something at them and they can't help reacting. Watch.
With that, Taln whipped the sword out, leaving the sheath in Jasnah's hand, and jumped toward the second shard bearer. The man turned in surprise, raising his weapon. Taln swung his sword, and the shard bearer parried reflexively, slicing Taln's weapon in half. The shard bearer didn't notice the dagger in Taln's other hand until it was too late. The Vaden cried out, dying with a length of steel in his eye, and Taln grabbed his shard blade as it fell, then jumped directly at the back of the man dueling Meridas. Taln cut down the second shard bearer before the man even knew he was there, dropping him with a thrust directly between two sections of shard plate. Meridas scowled as his opponent died.
"You peasant," he hissed angrily. "That was against protocol. You attacked a man already engaged in a duel."
Taln snorted, picking up the second shard blade. He gestured toward the open door from whence the shard bearers had come. Beyond, Jasnah could make out a small pile of corpses, all of them in servants' clothing.
"Men who would condone that receive no quarter from me," Taln said, stepping toward Jasnah.
He held out the second shard blade to Kemnar.
"I watched you fight to protect the lady. You are a man of skill and honor. Consider yourself promoted."
Kemnar's eyes widened slightly. Even he, with his sarcasm and seeming indifference to noble politickings, would have dreamed of someday owning a shard blade. It was an honor a nobleman as low-born as he would probably never receive. He glanced at Jasnah, and she nodded slightly. Kemnar took the blade with reverent hands. Behind, Meridas's expression darkened even further. Taln turned and held out the second shard blade.
"Now," he said, "you will give me that blade you hold in exchange for this one."
Meridas frowned in confusion, then glanced down and smiled, hefting his blade.
"I think not. This one suits me just fine." "It was not a request," Taln said. "That blade was taken from me by force. I will have it back."
Meridas smiled, lowering the blade to his side in his dueling stance.
"You and I, then," he said. "Shall we see how you do when you aren't stabbing your opponent from behind?" "Very well," Taln said, putting one foot back, raising his blade.
"Enough," Jasnah snapped. "You would squabble with one another while the palace is being overrun around us, our people being slaughtered? Save your bickering for another time." Meridas didn't break form. Taln, however, had the decency to glance back with a small measure of guilt. He lowered his weapon. "Meridas," Jasnah continued, "this man claims to know a secret way out of the palace. I suggest you come with us, unless you plan to fight Vaidenar's army on your own. Kemnar, gather the shard plate." Shocked from his stupor, Kemnar nodded and moved forward. Shooting a wary glance at Meridas, Taln joined Kemnar, quickly unfastening the magical straps and gathering the pieces of metal in the dead men's cloaks.
"You believe the madman's claim?" Meridas said with a snort, strolling over to her.
"Do we have any other options?" Jasnah asked pointedly. Meridas frowned, his, Taln's, shard blade disappearing from his hand in a curling breath of white smoke. Taln and Kemnar rose a moment later, dual cloaks full of shard plate thrown over their shoulders, blades in hand.
"Let's go,"
Jasnah said, stalking back down the way they had come. Taln and Kemnar followed quickly. Meridas trailed with less enthusiasm. A few moments later, they reached the stairwell, and Jasnah pulled a lantern off the wall and led the way down a twisting, cramped stairwell. The truth was, she had never actually gone down them before. There was little reason for a high-ranking noblewoman to visit the cellars. As they reached the bottom, Her lantern revealed a group of nervous, spear-wielding servants. Their faces flashed with relief as they recognized her. Jasnah scanned the group and was surprised to realize that the numbers had swelled. Other servants must have sought refuge in the cellars as well. There had to be close to 100 people crowded between the wine racks and bags of grain. Entire families huddled uncertainly, watching her with hopeful eyes. "All right," Jasnah said, turning back to the stairwell as Taln and Kemnar reached the bottom. "Let's see this passage, madman." Taln pushed past her, dropping his pack of shard plate.
"Lan, please find someone to carry that," he requested.
The monk's eyes widened as he saw the gold-gilded metal beneath, and he glanced at Taln's blade with wonder. The crowd huddled away, whispering to one another as Taln walked toward the back of the room. Jasnah followed, surprised at the size of the cellars. They extended into the distance, a connection of catacomb-like stone rooms with great unadorned pillars to hold them up. Taln wove his way certainly, moving past barrels of water, sacks piled to the ceiling, and boxes of spices. The crowd trailed behind, a ghost-like group of men and women, their eyes haunted. Many were probably familiar with the cellars. They knew, as Jasnah did, that there was no exit through them. What had Jasnah led them to, trusting the whims of a madman? "Most of them would be dead without that madman," Jasnah reminded herself. "As would you. He deserves to be heard, if only for that reason." Eventually, Taln paused inside a small, unused room. He waved Jasnah forward with the light. The rest of the group paused uncertainly behind, standing just outside the room. Jasnah stepped inside, the tattered remnants of her dress train leaving a trail in the dust. The room was perhaps 10 feet by 10 feet, too small to be of much use. Dark mold covered one wall, and a couple of broken crates rested in the corner. Taln pushed aside a couple of crate pieces, then wiped the dust from the back wall. It was crafted of worked stone bricks, like the rest of the cellar, their color a dull gray. He pressed against one of the stones, and of course, nothing happened. Taln frowned. He pressed again, harder.
"Something's wrong," he mumbled.
Jasnah closed her eyes, exhaling softly.
"This should open," Taln complained quietly. "Chanaral himself designed the mechanism. It was crafted by the finest of epic shapers. Time should not have weakened it. The blades still work. Why wouldn't this?"
"They were trapped. Dead. Perhaps they could hide long enough until night, and then sneak away into the city. It was a slim hope. The invaders had to know that people would be in the cellars." Footsteps approached, and a figure pushed its way through the crowd to Jasnah's side.
"Someone's coming down the stairs," Kemnar said urgently. "We barred the door at the bottom, but—"
He said the words quietly, but the crowd was too close not to hear. Some of the people cried out, women clutching their husbands. Others looked down with despair. Jasnah glanced back at the madman. He stood on the left side of the small room, wiping at the mold covering the far wall. Beside her, Kemnar rushed over and grabbed the cloaks full of shard plate, then disappeared back in the direction of the stairwell. "Taln," she said, "we have to fight. Leave it. There is no passage." The madman ignored her.
"There," he said, almost to himself, breaking away what appeared to be a piece of aged mortar. "But what is the purpose of this?"
"Taln," Jasnah snapped. Then she paused. Something glittered beside Taln's hand. She frowned, stepping closer, holding up the light.
A shining black gemstone was set into the stones. Even as Jasnah approached, she could hear its tone begin to hum in her mind. Obsidian, her pole stone.
What?
She asked. Why is that there?
It's a lock,
Tom said with a frown.
Like the ones on the Oath Gates. I don't know where it could have come from. I wasn't here last return.
From behind, a series of rhythmic thumps echoed through the cellars, the sound of axes striking the stairwell door.
Time is short, my lady,
Kemnar's voice called in the distance.
We'll have to cut through the wall,
Talm said, turning from the obsidian and raising his shard blade.
Without an awakener to stroke the gemstone, we can't open the door. This will leave an opening for our enemies to follow, but perhaps the other shard bearers and I can hold the gap long enough to...
He trailed off, as Jasnah closed her eyes, listening to the call of the obsidian. It was a cool, clear tone in her mind. So familiar. Enticing. She took the tone of her own soul, rubbing it against that of the gemstone, calling forth its music. Even without opening her eyes, she knew the obsidian had begun to glow. A rumbling shook the room. Jasnah opened her eyes, then stepped back, as a portion of the wall in front of Talm fell away, throwing chips of mortar and dust into the air. It slid back into the wall, revealing a dark passage beyond. Talm stood, blade lowered, regarding her through unreadable eyes. Jasnah glanced behind self-consciously. She hadn't touched the obsidian, however. To anyone else, it would have appeared that Talm had opened the door, hopefully.
Get the wounded into the passage,
Talm commanded, waving at the gawking servants.
The rest of you, gather whatever supplies you can. We'll need lamp oil, grains, and water. Hurry!
Jasnah stepped aside, letting the servants begin to scramble through the opening. Kemnar returned a moment later, wearing the golden suit of shardplate. He paused, staring at the opening, then ran back to get Meridas and the other soldiers. The axes continued to fall in the background. Talm still watched her. Jasnah glanced down, not wanting to meet his eyes. A few minutes later, supplies gathered, the last of the peasants rushed into the hidden passage. Kemnar clinked past, as did Meridas, who had obviously claimed the other suit of plate. Eventually, Talm waved her through. She strode through the doorway, followed by the madman. The passage was of worked stone, much like the cellars, yet the stones here seemed different, more aged, if that was possible. Talm pressed a stone on the wall, and the hidden door rumbled closed behind them, sealing off the cellars even as the sounds of men yelling echoed closer and closer. The servants held their lanterns nervously in the dark. Talm waved them to move forward, straight ahead, into the darkness. The stone sloped downward, and Jasnah realized that she had no idea where they were going.
Where does this lead? She hissed at him.
Down,
Talm said simply, walking forward. Jasnah sighed, following him, last in line. She paused a second later, however, as she noticed a side passage. It appeared to be the only one in the corridor. She held her lantern high, revealing a door in the distance. It was beautiful. Worked of metal and gemstones, it sparkled in her lantern light. She could make out the pattern of the double eye set in its face, marked by 10 massive gemstones at the pole positions. Even from the distance, she could hear them humming slightly in her mind.
Come on,
Talm said, appearing again at her side.
What is that?
She asked. Talm paused, his eyes quiet as he regarded the door.
It is nothing, he finally said. Come.
Hesitantly, Jasnah allowed herself to be led away into the dark passageway and the bowels of the mountain.